Welcome to another edition of The Last Negroes at Harvard. I'm Kent Garrett. This podcast is about being black in America for over 80 years. It is Wednesday, April 3rd. In this issue, journalist John Woodford talks with the Rising News Channel and with Columbia University professor Jeffrey Sachs about Ukraine.
Support for U.S. funding for Ukraine is waning as the war enters its third year. A majority of Republicans now believe U.S. funding for Ukraine's defensive war effort is too much, a divide that's reflected in Congress, where House Republicans have repeatedly clashed with a vocal, more isolationist minority over foreign aid. The U.S. has sided with Ukraine from the start and has bolstered NATO by supporting Sweden and Finland's entry into the transatlantic alliance. And it looks like the Biden administration will be able to provide a fresh round of aid to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Meanwhile, GOP Speaker Mike Johnson has begun publicly laying out potential conditions for extending military aid to Ukraine. His current plan is to authorize the U.S. government to seize and sell Russian assets that have been frozen since the start of the war and use that money to finance Ukraine. Economist and Columbia professor Jeffrey Sachs joins us today to help make sense of the status of the war and this funding issue. Welcome, Professor Sachs.
Thanks. You can't make sense of this. It's a zoo. I am just hearing now, if the plan is to illegally seize Russian assets, kiss goodbye to America's role in the international monetary system. There are just limits to what you can do, though I don't think our members of Congress really understand much about this.
So can you speak to what you think should be happening here? Obviously, there is some friction within the Republican caucus. The Republican House has the narrowest majority in American history, which means that dissenters, which are in the minority, but which are present in the Republican Party, unlike in the Democratic Party for the most part, are able to exert their will, threaten to oust Mike Johnson the way they did Kevin McCarthy over this issue of foreign aid, specifically aid for Ukraine. What do you make of it?
Well, first of all, this is purely money down the drain. So if they want to rip up another $61 billion, which is not chump change, they seem intent on doing it, but it will mean nothing except more destruction for Ukraine. The fact of the matter is, if you don't listen to the nonsense in our mainstream media, but listen to your show and others, people would know that this war has destroyed Ukraine, and the longer it continues, the less there will be of Ukraine. It's very simple, actually. If this goes on longer, Russia will capture more territory. If it goes on long enough, Russia will capture Odessa, Kiev. If we continue the way we're doing, and this is a Biden project that goes back 10 years now, will completely destroy Ukraine. So the idea that this is siding with Ukraine is absurd. Anyone who really follows events knows that we're not siding with Ukraine. We have paid for hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians to go to the front lines and die, for more and more territory to be lost. Because the most basic point of this war, which is that we overthrew a government in Ukraine in 2014 that wanted neutrality so that we could push NATO enlargement, was reckless, stupid, and doomed to fail. And it failed. Now Biden is just trying to hide the failure to get past November, but the failure is seen on the battleground every day. If the Republicans play into this, it's unbelievable. Shame on them. They're basically on the right side, although Biden bludgeons them every day. You'll be the one to lose Ukraine. Well, the truth of the matter is Biden has been a disaster for Ukraine for a decade. The disaster is there in the graves of hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians and lost territory. This is a war that never should have happened. It was about NATO enlargement, where the Russians said no NATO on our borders, and Americans who were following this, like our CIA director, Bill Burns, who was then the U.S. ambassador to Russia in 2008, said, this is crazy. No way. The entire Russian political class is against this. But Biden and Obama and Hillary Clinton and Victoria Nuland, Jake Sullivan, Tony Blinken, they just barged ahead. They wrecked everything. And now they want another $61 billion to get them past November. It's a disgrace. It's completely a disgrace.
To play devil's advocate, let me, you know, give you the other side and then allow you to respond to that. You know, what do you say to people that maybe acknowledge there were certainly missteps with the expansion of NATO and the provocation, but nevertheless, Russia chose to respond to that with an invasion. The situation in Ukraine is due to that invasion. And so what do you say to people who think, well, but we are now responding to that invasion by funding, not committing American troops, but funding a resistance in Ukraine that wants to continue fighting?
Well, yeah, the war began 10 years ago when Victoria Nuland not only passed out cookies on Maidan, but engaged in insurrection to violently overthrow a government in Ukraine. Pretty stupid to have a regime change operation on a country with a 2,000-kilometer border with Russia. That's our American foreign policy. That's when this war started. This war didn't start in February 2022. It started in February 2014. It started with Nuland. It started with Blinken. It started with Sullivan. It started with Biden, who was a key person in that whole thing. And then the fighting went on for 10 years. And then in December 2021, Putin said, look, stop the NATO enlargement. We can avoid an escalation. I talked to the White House at that point. Nah, we don't stop anything. They just thought they had all the cards. We're going to cut them out of the SWIFT banking system. We're going to bring the economy to the knees. Bunch of nonsense by ignorant people. And so Putin escalated. He didn't start the war. He escalated the war. And within basically a week, Zelensky said, okay, we can be neutral. And the Turks mediated negotiations. And then, though the U.S. government wants to hide all of these facts, which are sitting out there for those who know where to find them, the U.S. intervened and told the Ukrainians, you keep fighting. And we have our senators who say this is the best money can buy, because it's Ukrainians dying, not Americans. They're weakening Russia. Well, they're not weakening Russia, but they are killing Ukrainians. So this is not responding to Putin's invasion. The war started 10 years ago, and we kept refusing every off-ramp. Till this day, Robbie, you know, you hear Putin say, and if you listen, every day, we're open to negotiations. And then these fools in the U.S. government say, there's no one to negotiate. They don't want to negotiate. And then President Putin says, oh, we're open to negotiation. Oh, there's no one to negotiate is what we hear from the U.S. side. This is just narrative. It's destroyed Ukraine, and they just rip up money like there's no tomorrow. So another $61 billion. And now I hear from you that the latest plan is to take the illegally confiscated assets of Russia, because there's no legal basis to do this, and use that. That'll be really great for the international financial system, I'll tell you, because these are people who don't think ahead one day. They just improvise day by day. And then they'll find out, oh, things don't work out so well for the U.S. dollar, for the U.S. as reserve currency, for the U.S. place in the world, because these people are acting like clowns, frankly, day by day, not thinking ahead, doubling down on lost gambles, and everything to tell a story so that they can get to the elections in the way they see fit.
Professor, I want to ask you about how the United States gets out of this now, because I'm reminded of conversations that surrounded the war on Afghanistan for years, which was that we shouldn't have gotten into it, this is a mistake, but now we've destabilized the country, we are in neck deep, we can't just stop funding and abandon this project. And that's a hamster wheel of sorts, right? So there are some people that I think are going to listen to this and say, well, I agree with everything you're saying, but what do you do at this point? It's a, you know, is it just a sunk cost? Or is there some obligation to unwind this in a way that's responsible and doesn't leave Ukrainians high and dry?
Ukrainians are high and dry no matter what we do. We've killed nearly 500,000 of them through this stupid project. And the ones that that throw good money after bad are the ones themselves that are personally culpable for this. This is Biden's project. So this is the first starting point. You don't throw good lives after those already dead and good money after bad when you have an absolute failure and disaster on your hands. By the way, this is like every American effort. I'm old enough to remember Vietnam. The same words said about Vietnam. We do this over and over and over again in the U.S. because our so-called leaders have no sense and they don't think ahead. So yes, we have to stop this, but the one thing that we don't do, and it's really a bit of a mystery to me, it's the worst I've seen in my whole lifetime, we don't negotiate. Does Biden call Putin and say we need to talk? No, that would be weakness, that would be appeasement. They don't even have the idea that you negotiate anything. And you know, if you try everything by a military approach and a failed one, and you do it in these proxy wars where it's the people themselves in these countries that are dying on the front lines, and you don't know anything about diplomacy, well, you make a complete mess of the world. And so the answer is, the first thing is, the US and Russia should talk to each other because there's a cause of this war, and that's NATO enlargement. And by the way, that's no secret, and that's not propaganda. Even the Secretary General of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, said that absolutely explicitly, as did the top negotiator for Zelensky, David Arakamiya. This is a war about NATO enlargement. So why doesn't Biden call up Putin and say, you know what, we got to stop the war, and that whole NATO enlargement that I was party to going back to the 1990s and to 2014 coup and all, that was a bad idea. Let's figure out how to stop the war, recognize mutual security, and stop the bloodshed and massacres in Ukraine. If Biden were really acting like a president, that's what he would do.
It's been about a year since a group of economists wrote an open letter about you, accusing you of denying the agency of Ukraine, peddling Putin talking points, all of those kinds of things. It's a year later. How do you respond to them?
Well, I don't respond. I tell them I told you so. I told them so from the beginning that this would be a complete disaster for Ukraine. People don't want to hear this. They don't understand. They don't know enough about American history. I told them Ukraine is going to be like Afghanistan. And boy, is it like Afghanistan right now. So they didn't want to hear, that's not right, that's not fair, Professor Sachs. I was telling them facts. I was giving them some good advice. They didn't want to hear that. They wanted to hear about victory, glory, how Ukraine's going to succeed, that great counteroffensive, all the rest, all the baloney. But I said from the beginning that this would be a disaster. I said this is just the latest neocon debacle. And I said explicitly it was going to leave Ukraine like Afghanistan. And it was completely avoidable. So that's what I tell them. I'm sorry. Listen. Pay attention. Learn something. That's what I say to them.
The Jeffrey Sachs. And now we go to John Woodford with some commentary and some sense of what's happening. Hi, how are you?
Yeah, well, I agree with his take on it, Professor Sachs. You know, it's kind of interesting that in this country now, where we have our propaganda arms in the media, that what he said is being branded as isolationism. If you don't support mm-hmm. what they're doing in Ukraine, supposedly you're an isolationist. So this is a way to use language to obscure the situation, because it's not isolationism that from his point of view, it's an approach where you don't want to have wars.
Mm-hmm.
It's to have diplomacy and not wars and fighting and killing and wasting of oodles and oodles of money in these military adventures. When they keep doing the same thing over and over in Afghanistan and
Vietnam,
places,
when you think of
it's
Vietnam,
obvious that they're doing it on purpose for some reason. And I think one of it is, of course, the arms manufacturers make a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
and the people that they pay to put into Congress and on these think tanks who plan these things, they all make a lot of money. So even though it'd be nice to hope that they would turn to diplomacy, as he also points out, these people don't want to say to the public that they made a mistake, especially going into an election.
Right, right.
So they would rather waste billions upon billions of more money that we need in our country for our own well-being.
Right.
And they'd rather squander it and waste it rather than risk being shown up as failed in diplomacy and perhaps losing an election.
Right.
So I think that's the bitter underlying horrible truth of the matter. This war, and also, of course, they talk about the NATO. These people who were running NATO and these generals here and there coming out of these other countries, they all represent in their country certain economic, war profiteering
mm-hmm.
forces.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all in it. They all stand to gain. They don't want to, none of them wants to be shown up as making a mistake. So they would rather throw more and more and more mm-hmm. into these wars. And naturally, there are U.S. people involved near those front lines, too. There are troops, and they're probably running drones and doing all sorts of high-tech things that we don't know about, because
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, a lot is done in secret
mm-hmm.
in our country that should be in the open. I mean, if the people in our country, in a democracy ideally, even the founding fathers talked about these things, where they ideally you don't have a lot of secret diplomacy and you don't have the country being committed to things and the public doesn't know about it
mm-hmm.
or is misinformed about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad situation. So right now, we see a lot of these policies around the world where we are either not informed about the underlying motives of it, or we're not even told about it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why they want to get people like Assange and put him away, or Snowden or Chelsea Manning, these other whistleblowers
mm-hmm.
who risk their reputations and lives and freedom, actually to try to tell people, look, this is what's going on
mm-hmm.
behind our backs.
But I mean, to an extent, isn't this another war that the mainstream media is just not dealing with?
That's right, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Because they try to control the public. Look, here I am in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Our rivals are Ohio State, or Michigan State. In other words, they try to get the populace like anything that's good for Ohio State
mm-hmm.
is bad for us. And they try to get people in this mood of conflict and contest and your home team and your
mm-hmm.
your home
mm-hmm.
country. You would be a bad citizen of your local area if you were to be a traitor and want the other team to win, that sort of a thing. I mean, they get people in a frame of mind like that. But, this war in Ukraine was started way long ago, and it probably has to do with oil and other kind of natural gas and other interests of speculators and corporations who stand to gain, and we just, we don't get the information about what's really behind it, because it's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
There's no freedom or national security interest for us here as regular citizens and what happens there. And the Russians aren't ready to invade all over Europe. They don't have the power to invade and try to take over people all over Europe. That isn't even You know, it's not even in the cards. This is just a bugaboo thing that they're going to invade these other countries. The war was inflicted on them, really, as he's saying. And he knows because he was invited over there when Jeffrey Sachs, he was invited to go set up their economy to be more like ours after they got rid of Gorbachev and brought in Yeltsin.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Sachs was over there, and he was involved in the privatization of a lot of their nationally owned industries, where the oligarchs came in and got the resources in Russia. He was part of that. And then he thought it was going to lead to democracy and partnership. You know, they had certain ideals,
right.
And it didn't go that way. And so that's what turned him into a big critic of it, but he knows, you know, he knows how the game is played, and so he's not given much of a airplay in the big mass media, because he would have thrown if we had known about a lot of this from the very beginning, Victoria Nuland overthrowing the other Ukrainian government because they wanted to be neutral. We said, well, you can't be neutral. And again, as he talks about the Turkish intervention, when they could have had talks early on in this conflict, and they sent Boris Johnson of England over to tell the Ukrainians, no, the money's going to be turned off. You guys are going to be left high and dry if you don't pursue this war. You've got to commit to the war. You can't go having talks with Russia where you might wind up not being in NATO or might accept neutrality. So that's what's going on there.
Do you think Biden's on top of all of this, or what? Or somebody else?
Well, the people behind, it's got his stamp and name on it, so he's going to be desperately trying to save face, because that's what these big politicians do, of all, whether the Republicans or Democrats. They don't want to be associated with a disaster.
Right.
And sometimes then this ego gets them into a bigger disaster.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they really face here, is a bigger disaster. I mean, they've got a lot going on around the world with their policies. Look at their support of what Israel was doing has got them into trouble. They don't tell you that this Turkish election, which has, it's going to bear upon a lot, this Erdogan had his opponent who won has been calling for dropping trade with Israel because of the Gaza genocide.
But
the New York Times and the BBC, they leave that out when they talk about the significance of the Turkish election. They leave that out of the. They don't even store. You have to see it in another news source that's not for the general public. That was one of the strong polls for this upset of Erdogan.
Yeah,
is that there are a lot of Turks are saying, "Hey, you guys really are not opposing Israel the way you should."
Yeah.
They don't want to go to war, but this Gaza genocide is a huge thing internationally.
Yeah.
And we see it just, it's sort of de-emphasized here. We see David Brooks in the New York Times say, well, what is Israel going to do to defend itself? Unfortunately, we got to kill and slaughter, oodles and oodles of people. This is not going to play well in the world.
I agree. All right, sir. Well, thank you for coming on, and we'll talk later.
Okie doke.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was John Woodford. He comes on pretty much every week to give us some advice and words of wisdom, mainly in foreign affairs.